Zig Ziglar has been called the world's foremost sales and personal development speaker. You'll understand why as we join a session where Zig Ziglar explains why today is the first day of the rest of your life.
Years ago in Oklahoma, they started all on some property belonging to an old Indian. And this old Indian, all of his life, had been poverty-stricken. He didn't have anything. In the teenage vernacular of our day, even have wheels of any kind, not even wagon wheels. And this old Indian, all of his life, had wanted something to ride. And so this oil that was discovered on his property brought immense wealth. And so he invested in an automobile, a Cadillac, a big, long, black touring car, to be specific. And back in those days, they used to put the spare tires on the back. And this old Indian, instead of just having the two regular spare tires that are normally on the back of those cars, wanted to have the longest of them all. And so he put four additional tires back there. Now I want you to get this picture. This old Indian also bought a black Abraham Lincoln stovepipe hat. He stuck a big black cigar out of his mouth. He had on the tails, and here he goes downtown in this hot, dusty little Oklahoma cow town. And he was a friendly old soul. He'd turn to the left and speak to people. He would turn to the right, and he'd even turn all the way around and speak to people. And interestingly enough, this old Indian never ran into anybody. He never ran over anybody. He never did any physical damage. He never did any property damage. The interesting thing is, perhaps the reason he did none of these things was because directly in front of this big, beautiful Cadillac automobile were two horses pulling it. Now, local mechanics said there was nothing wrong with the engine in the car. It was in perfect condition. But this old Indian never had learned how to reach up and switch on the ignition. There were 100 horses there. He was using two. This is what I want to talk to you about tonight. I want to talk to you about the 100 horses that lies inside of every human being. You know, true education simply means to draw out. And what we're going to try to do this evening, ladies and gentlemen, as we work with you for these brief few moments, we're going to show you how to reach down and grab that which you already have and put it to work so that we can get more of the things in life that we really want. I want to turn you on. More important than just turning you on for this evening, we want to give you the key so that you in the future at any time at your wish can reach up and turn all of those horses on so that you're where you want to go, get what you want to get, and be what you want to be. I want to get you as excited as old Bill Carlotta was. I was speaking in Seattle, Washington about 2 years ago to the Northwestern Lumbermen's Association. As I was talking, I tell a lot of stories, as you might kind of suspect already, and I was just talking away, telling a story, and all of a sudden, Big Bruiser, along about the 11th row, stood straight up. He must have been 6 feet six. He must have weighed 250 pounds. He said, "Zig, let me tell you a story." Well, I have a standard policy. If they're 6 feet six and weigh 250 and ask permission to tell a story, I always grant it. So I said, "Okay, partner, shoot, give me your story." He said, "Okay, it's about Bill." "Stand up, Bill." And this little squirt standing next to him, I bet he didn't weigh 100, or sitting next to him, I bet that boy didn't weigh 120 pounds, just a little bitty guy. So he said, "Stand up, Bill." "No, Bill." As he stood there, this guy that's doing the talking says, "About 6 weeks ago, old Bill came into camp, walked right up to me, stuck out his hand, and said, 'Shake hands with your tree topper.'" And he said, "So if you know what a tree topper is..." But a tree topper is this guy that climbs up in the top of the tree and he saws the top out of the tree and then just holds on for dear life. And so I looked at this little guy and I said, "Well, Squirt, this is a man's job. You can't be the tree topper." He said, "You know, Zig, that guy didn't do a thing in the world but take off his shirt." And he said, "I am a man." And you know, Zig, he is too. He's little. Believe me, he is a man. He's all muscle. So little Bill said, "Give me a tree. Give me an axe. And if I don't knock that tree down in less than half the length of time it would take the best man you got to it, I won't say another word about being the tree topper." So I said, "Heck, Zig, I had nothing to lose." We went out to the woods. I gave him an axe. We picked out a spruce tree. And he said, "I've taken my best man at least 25 minutes to put that tree on the ground." But little Bill went to work and he said, "I'll tell you one thing. He said, "Man, I've never seen a man work like that in all my life. That steel was as, it was just like a solid sheet against that tree, and it hit it over and over and over." And he said, "In less than 13 minutes, that tree was on the ground." And I looked at him, I said, "Bill, when did you learn how to cut down trees like that?" And old Bill looked up at me with those steel blue eyes, and he said, "In the Sahara." Sahara? Bill, the Sahara is a desert. He looked up at me again with those steel blue eyes, and he said, "It is now." I tell you what we're going to do tonight, folks. We're going to turn you on like Bill Carlotta, because we're in sales business, and I believe that if we got you properly turned on, we can go to the Sahara and we can do some business. You know what we're going to talk about tonight? We're going to talk about biscuits. And we're going to talk about fleas. And we're going to talk about pup handles. We're going to talk about all of the good things that make up the thing that we call motivation and an understanding of what lies within. We want to help you to get out through using these things. And I believe that the average guy and gal will help, and I'll tell you why. Our insurance friends tell us, and I'm certain they're right, that if you follow 100 young men aged 25 until they're 65 years old, that of those who are still living, only five of them fit financially. You know, this is tragic. This is America. This is the land of opportunity. This is a land where opportunities are so unique that several years ago I saw in the paper where in Georgia, a tailor accumulated a fortune in prison. You see, opportunity is where we make it. Opportunity, if you will, lies within. There's no such thing as a business failure. There are only people failures. And so if we have people failures, then we obviously have people problems. And if we've got people problems, then we need to look at, we deal with the humanics of people, and this is where the biscuits come from. And you know, during the Depression, things were considerably different from what they are now. Now, don't misunderstand this. We always had plenty to eat in my house. I know we had plenty to eat, because when I'd pass my plate for seconds, they'd always say, "Nope, you've had plenty." We lived next door to some rich folks. And I know that they were rich for two reasons. Number one, they had a cook. And number two, the cook had something to cook. And in the Depression, this was a sure sign of wealth. I was over there for lunch one day, as I do most every day. The cook brought the biscuits out. Now, I wouldn't exaggerate to you if I said that those biscuits were no thicker than the silver dollar. The cook's name was Maud. And Maud was real rare human beings that was big all over, most especially in the heart. Now, I was talking to Maud when she brought those biscuits out. I looked at him, I said, "Maud, what in the world happened to those biscuits?" And Maud reared back and gave a beautiful belly laugh. And she said, "Well, I'll tell you about those biscuits." She said, "They squatted to rise. But," she said, "they just got cooked in the squat." Do you know anybody like that? Do you know anybody that's going to do a certain thing? Or do you know some half of mind to do something? Step number one then, folks, as we start on this journey, this trip, the most exciting, fascinating thing that we as human beings are privileged to take is the success which starts at this instant. The journey you see that all of us are on at this minute, because success is not a destination, it's a journey. It's the direction in which we're going. We're headed in the right direction when we realize that it's up to us. Establish some goals. Now, you've heard this. Nothing new about it. But one of the things most people don't truly have is a goal. You know, the great J.C. Penney said, "Give me a stock clerk with a goal, and I'll give you a man who'll make history." But he said, "You give me a man without a goal, and I'll give you a stock clerk." The best day the world has ever seen. Take the most powerful magnifying glass man has ever made. Hold it, if you will, over a pile of newspaper clippings, which is a highly volatile substance, and you'll never start a fire. Provided you keep that magnifying glass moving. But almost instantly, when you hold the glass still, harness the power of the universe, move the magnifying glass, and boom, we've got a roaring fire. Man is the same way. We've got to have an objective. To get somewhere that you do not know where you're going is as difficult as coming back from where you've never been. Man is functionally like a bicycle. Unless we are moving onward and upward towards something, we're going to falter and fall. So we need to have the goal. But You know, Dr. Bill mentioned problems. Precious, the problems is the fact that in this world of ours, we don't have enough people who understand the most important thing of all as to how to reach our goals. You must know to train fleas. How many of you want to know, have got to know how to train fleas? Good to see your hand. Well, it's pretty simple. You put them in a jar, and fleas jump. Get them, hit the top over and 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 over. And you watch them jump for a time. Then all of a sudden, you'll discover something very interesting about those fleas there can jump. But all of a sudden, they no longer hit the top. And then you take the top off, and they'll jump and jump and jump and jump. But they can't jump out. I said they can't jump out for one reason. They can't. You see, they have conditioned themselves to do just so much. And once they've conditioned themselves to do just so much, this is all that they can do. And people, you see, they start out in life to climb the mountain, to write the book, to break the records, to become an immortal. They become what we call SNIOPS. That's spelled S-N-I-O-P. And that's a person who is susceptible to the negative influence of other people. You see, SNIOPS are around us all the time. They're always saying negative things. They're putting negative thoughts and words and negative expressions in our minds. And to me, this is one of the real intriguing things about humanity itself, about human nature. You see, if I were to come in your home tonight with a pail of garbage and dump on your living room floor, one of three things would happen. You would either whip me physically, or else you would call the law and have me arrested, or you'd get your gun out and you'd say, "Nigga, why don't you clean that mess up?" And interestingly enough, I could take a good cleaner, and in a matter of minutes it would be cleaned up. And yet here's something real interesting of nature and about how we invite the SNIOPS to dump the garbage into our minds. People come along and say, "Hey, the interest rate's going up. That's bad for business." We say, "Yeah, tell me all about it." Somebody comes along and say, "Master sell in Dallas or Albuquerque or wherever it is." And you say, "Yeah, tell me all about it." Somebody says, "Did you hear about the boss and his secretary? Man alive." You say, "No, tell me about it. Would you put it in? Would you dump the garbage in? Dump the garbage in? Dump the garbage in?" It's amazing, isn't it, how we object to physical garbage on the floor and yet invite, even encourage people to dump the garbage in. Seeing the way this thing works. An exciting experience in Winnipeg, Canada recently. Spoke at a national convention there, and when it was over, I discovered that of the top 19 salesmen, 17 of the 19, including the first 11, all were using cassette recorders. And all of them, while they were shaving every single morning, were putting the good things in. They're putting the good words, the positive words, so that they got that day started. So let me ask you a question. If I can give you a formula that won't cost any money, won't involve any time, and won't require any work. Price is right, isn't it? But if you'll use this formula for just 21 days, two amazing things will happen. Number one, you will immediately start having more fun. And number two, you will immediately start making more money. Now, if I can give you such a formula, how many of you, before I even tell you what it is, would agree to give it an honest try for the next 21 days? Could I see your hands? Hey, what about that? You know, most people start every day either in neutral or in reverse. They sit around waiting on somebody to come along and tell them how to act, how to think, how to feel. Picture, if you will, that alarm clock ringing tomorrow morning and watch average Joe get up. He gets up like today is going to be another yesterday. And so the alarm goes off and he lays there and he slaps his face an arm or two. And he says, "Hon, is it 7 o'clock already?" "Son of a gun. Is that rain? Is it raining?" "Oh, people don't buy things on a rainy day. I tell you, call me back at 8, though I do have an important appointment." And this is the way a lot of people start their day. And then they wonder why they don't have more results and more benefits to show for the work. But you've agreed to do. And now you'll begin to understand why I got you to promise to do it before I told you what it was. Okay? Tomorrow morning when your alarm clock rings, here's what you have agreed to do. You're going to sit straight up and you're going to pop your hands and you're going to say, "Oh, boy, it's a good day to get out and go sell whatever it is I sell." I want you to get this picture. There you sit on the side of the bed. Your hair's all down in your eyes. You're slapping your hands like a 9-year-old child. You're saying, "Oh, boy, it's a good day." And I'm going to tell you something. If you live to be 900, you'll never tell a bigger one than that. But let me tell you a couple of things that's already happened. Number one, you are up. And this is where you wanted to be when you set the alarm, didn't you? And number two, you have started to reach in and gain control of your own mind. And then you go into the shower. While you're taking the shower, you sing. Something that's peppy and cheerful and optimistic. You know, Will James, the father of American psychology, said, we do not sing because we're happy. He says, we're happy because we sing. You see, psychologically, folks, you're on very sound ground. You can't be negative at the top of your voice. Try it sometimes. And still, it helps if you've got a mirror on the side of that bed so that when you set up and doing all this routine, you can really see just how ridiculous you do look. Because, you see, you'll get tickled at you. And so long as you get tickled at you, you don't really have a... Then you go into breakfast, and I know, fellas, heck, you've had bacon and eggs every day for the last 287 days, but today... Today, when you go into breakfast and a good wife's got the bacon and eggs on the table, you slap the table and you say, huh, you mean to tell me that we've got bacon and eggs for breakfast? That's what I was hoping you'd have. I tell you, the shock value alone has got to be worth something. I was making this talk up in Plainfield, New Jersey in 1955. I'll never forget it. I made this talk. 2 days later, I was back in the same community. I walked in one of the offices that had been represented there at the convention. As I walked in, these two guys in the front office just dang near fell out of their chairs. And I said, what are you guys laughing at? One of them said, friend, we're not laughing. It's more of a warning. You better get out of here. And I said, what are you talking about? They said, you almost got two people fired yesterday with that silly talk of yours. And I said, man, get serious. What are you talking about? He said, well, we are serious. Do you remember the lady sitting in the dress down on the front row? I said, one kind of body by Fisher, brain by Tinker Toy? Is that the one you're talking about? He said, yep, that's her. Well, he said, let me tell you, you made a believer out of her. Man, she followed directions completely. She crossed the T's. She dotted the I's. She did it all. She went home. She set the alarm. When that thing went off the next morning, she said, straight up bed. She popped her hands. She said, oh, boy, it's a good day to get up and go sell real estate. She went in the shower, and she took a shower, and she was whistling and singing and cutting up and carrying on, just having an hilarious time. And when she came out of that shower, her husband saw how good she felt, and neither one of them went to work that day. You know, the American people are pretty negative. They're so negative, as a matter of fact, that they refer to these electrical appliances on the street corners, either red lights or stop lights or traffic lights. And yet, if you think about it that long, we know what they are, don't we? They're go lights. True? You see, they were put there to make traffic go smoother and faster and better. And if you don't believe it, you just cut one of them off one day and watch the traffic back up. You see, traffic doesn't back off because somebody cut off a red light. It backs up because somebody turned off a go light. Then why do people call them stop lights? It's because they're snobs. You see, they've heard other people call them that, so that's what they call them. How many of you ever sit at the telephone? You're engrossed in a conversation and you start a little doodling. You know, a few circles, a few triangles, a few rectangles, a few squares. Then you get a little fancy, you know, and shade her in. Okay, how many of you ever sold a doodle? Apparently the doodle market is pretty limited, huh? Okay. So for the next 21 days, every time you sit down at the phone, you're going to write down, I can. And then you're going to write down whatever it is that your objective is. You're going to write it down on a sheet of paper. You'll put it in your pocket. You'll put it in your purse. You'll put it on the bathroom mirror. But most important of all, we will burn it indelibly into our subconscious mind. It becomes then, if you will, a permanent part of us. Take a squirrel. A young squirrel, 1,000 miles from all other squirrels. He will store nuts for the winter because something inside of him compels him to do so. Take a duck. He'll go south for the winter because something inside of him compels him to do this thing. I cannot believe that an all-loving creator would not put something inside of us that guided, steered, or directed us toward the objectives in life that are great and worthwhile that we really want to achieve. This brings us up, ladies and gentlemen, to something that's most important. A lot of times when I get on this little subject right here, many people tune us out. They've heard some successful life before, but when you start talking about work, They're kind of like the fellow that somebody asked him how long he'd been working for his company, and he said, well, ever since they threatened to fire me. I have a friend down in South Alabama. Their names are Bernard Haygood and Jimmy Glenn. They were out riding through the South Alabama foothills one day. No, Bernard got a little thirsty and said, hey, Jimmy, let's go back here and see if this house has got a pump behind it. Maybe we can get some water. So they drove back, and sure enough, there was this old abandoned pump. No, Bernard hopped out, and he grabbed the handle. You know, how many of you folks have ever used one of these? Hey, we were at home then. No, Bernard got to pumping away, you know, and he'd been pumping a couple of minutes. And finally he said, Jimmy said, you better take that bucket over there and dip some water out of it. He said, we got to prime this pump a little bit. You see, he discovered something quite important. You got to put something in before you can get something out. And this is the game of life. You got to put something in before you get something out. And yet so many people stand in front of the stove of life, as Nightingale says, and says, now, stove, you give me some heat, and then I'll put some wood in you. So many people go to the boss and say, give me a raise in the work. Make me the sales manager and then I'll start qualifying. But that's not the way it works. You first must put in and then you get out. And it was a pretty hot day. It was August in South Alabama, that is. And old Bernard was just a pumping away, you know. And he said, you know, Jimmy, don't believe it's any water down there. And old Jimmy said, yes, it is, Bernard. This is South Alabama. And down here, the wells are real deep. It requires an awful lot of pumping. And so many salespeople never understand this, that the things that are really good and the things that are really worthwhile just involve an awful lot of pumping. But by now, old Bernard just sweating up a storm. And so he finally just threw his hands up. He said, Jimmy, no water down there. Jimmy said, man, don't stop, don't stop. Man, he said, if you stop, that water goes all the way back down and you start all over. How many times do we waste an awful lot of good work because we don't do an awful lot more or just a little more sometimes? How many times we've been calling on the prospect and the prospect said, hey, that's what I've been wanting. As a matter of fact, my wife and I were talking about it just yesterday, and we've decided we need some more. Let me see now. This is the evening. You see me on Saturday morning, and I'll let you know what the decision is. So you go back on Saturday morning, and that water has gone all the way back down, and you got all over from where you are. You know what I like about this? I love this illustration for a lot of reasons. Number one, this has nothing to do with personality. This has nothing to do with education. This has nothing to do with whether you're black or white, whether you're a Jew, Catholic, or Protestant. This has to do with our rights as free Americans to work as long as we wish, as hard as we wish, and as enthusiastically as we wish. I say the greatest privilege that any of us Americans have is the privilege of work. Not to work just the 8-hour day, but the 10-hour day, or the 12-hour day, or the 14-hour day can in this fantastic profession of selling. You see, it's our rights. Not only is it our right, but it's our obligation, because as salespeople, if we've got something good to sell, and friend, if you haven't, you got no business doing what you're doing. If we've got something good to sell, then we need to share the good news. We need to spread the products. We need to let the folks know and benefit as a result of it. Because, you know, the professional salesman keeps 27 other people employed. That's right. So you see, as professionals, we have an obligation. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wind up this evening by telling you what I think is the last and perhaps the most important thing of all. And that is this little step, the last one, if you will. And that's what we call desire. When I think about desire, I always think about Pete Gray. For my money, this is a man who is an immortal. This is a man who belongs in Cooperstown. This is a man who belongs in the Hall of Fame. Because as a very young man, he had said, hey, I'll play Major League Ball. Someday I'll make it all the way to the big top. Someday I'll play in Yankee Stadium. And in Yankee Stadium, he played in 1944 as a member of the St. Louis Browns team. He wasn't a regular. He did not last the year out. So far as I know, he never hit a home run. He was too slow to be considered a good base runner. He was not, in other words, a superstar. And yet he belongs in Cooperstown. Because here's a man, ladies and gentlemen, who made it all the way to the top with just one arm. He never looked down and said, this I don't have. He simply looked up and said, this I do have. He possesses, you see, the desire that makes up what we call intelligent ignorance. Intelligent ignorance is that rare quality that we see in these individuals who know what cannot be done. And because they do not know what cannot be done, They go out and do it. They're kind of like the old story about the bumblebee. You know, the bumblebee cannot fly. We all know that. His body's his wings are too light. Aerodynamically, it's impossible for him to fly. And I'm certain that if the bumblebee could read the scientific reports, that he would be sitting on the ground. But the bumblebee read, does he? The bumblebee flies. You give me a man with just average ability, but who has enormous desire, and I will give you back a champion every single time. You know, if we take counsel of our fears, ladies and gentlemen, there are a lot of bad things that happen. But if we begin to investigate and really understand so much of what lies within us, then there's no place to go. Years ago in New York City, a balloon salesman was selling balloons. And Bennis would slow down a little bit, and he would release one of the balloons, and it would go up, and a crowd would gather. In a few moments, he would release a balloon, perhaps this time a red one. Then he would release a white one, and then he would release a yellow one. And presently, a little Negro boy walked up to him, pulled on his coat sleeve or coat, and said, "Miss, if you released one of those black balloons, would it go up?" And the man looked down at him with a wisdom that you wouldn't expect to find in one whose station in life is this humble. And he said, "Son, it's what's inside of those balloons that make them go up. I'm persuaded beyond any reasonable doubt that it's inside of us that will make us go up." And folks, it's not what you get by reaching your destination that's the important thing. It's what you become by reaching the destination. And the most exciting thing of all, as I close this evening, is simply this. Regardless of what might have happened up until now, today is the first day of the rest of your life